Travel, it's one of life's greatest pleasures. When we journey abroad, we discover new places and meet fascinating people, but we also gain perspective and take on a wider view of the world around us.
That was Trevor Ranges, and I'm Scott Coates. After more than 25 years living and working in Asia, we've developed an amazing network of interesting characters throughout the region. Talk Travel Asia is our way of sharing them with you.
Plug in and get connected to hot tips, interesting perspectives, and expert travel advice as we cultivate travel insight through intelligent conversation.
One of the world's most exotic islands, Sri Lanka boasts diverse culture and religious beliefs, as well as a considerable natural beauty. After 5 decades of civil war, peace in Sri Lanka opened the island to international travel around 2009. A decade later, a burgeoning tourism was nipped in the bud by COVID. Today, we'll have a guest with great knowledge about the island from a tourism perspective, particularly with some hot tips for visitors looking to explore this exotic island off the southeast coast of India, particularly focusing on Sri Lanka's Tamil majority provinces. From Bangkok, this is Scott Coates, and with me, as always, is...
Hey, Scott. Trevor here in Siem Reap. How's it going?
It's going great, man. Have you been to Sri Lanka before?
No, but I think we did an episode once because I'm aware that you went before, and I feel like we talked about it on the show maybe one time, but we haven't really had anybody on as a guest to talk about it. So, you know, I don't know a whole lot other than, you know, other people I know who have visited, and I've met a couple of people from Sri Lanka through the East West Center. So it sounds neat. The history is quite interesting as well. So, you know, if I can't travel there myself, I hope we can cover it more on the show.
Yeah, I went, I think, in Christmas New Year 2014, headed to Adam's Peak, kind of in the south, but inland, for a nice hike through the night to a peak, which was awesome. Went to Marissa and Weligama for some surfing on nice sandy bottom beaches that were safe to kind of get handle on it. Gaul in the southwest, which is a super cool walled off place, and then a bit of time in Colombo. I mean, I would love to go back. This might have the most different range of stuff in it for a small country. I mean, they've got tea fields, mountains, safaris, religious relics, mountains, some of the world's best beaches and surf. I mean, they really do have it all in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, you know that. I mean, maybe I knew it first because it was originally called Ceylon, or it was formerly known as Ceylon. I don't even know the history of that. There's probably some like colonial era stuff that's similar to India since it's so close to India there. Wikipedia says it's called the Democratic Socialist Republic of Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that means it's like a Laotian socialism, or is it, you know, it's some distinctive form of government. That would be interesting for me. And I know that like it's in the Bay of Bengal, like Indian Ocean near the Maldives. So I got to think that, you know, the snorkeling, scuba diving, maybe even surfing is pretty good.
Yeah. One thing I know living here in Thailand is that Thai Buddhism, that is practiced here, and sort of their stupa design comes from way of Ceylon and Sri Lanka. So they adopted a lot of the things from there, which is kind of cool. So I'm looking forward to that. But just remember, if you're listening now, you're enjoying this, help us keep it going. Help us cover the cost. Become a patron. Click donate on our website or go to patreon.com, search the show name, and sponsor from as little as a few dollars a month upwards, and keep this going because there are costs, and we really appreciate the support. But also, if you do become a patron, you get a special bonus episode in between all of these for patrons only. Sometimes it's a conversation Trevor and I have. Lately, we shared a video of cycling in Praia, Thailand's farther north province. And we also had a fun episode where we just collect weird, wacky stories about things going on in this part of the world. And we shared them, like everything from all kinds of snakes to monkeys, one about an otter getting loose on a plane. So become a patron and help keep it going. But let's bring Ryan in and chat to Sri Lanka. Ryan Verberkmoos has authored over 130 guidebooks to destinations worldwide, including Lonely Planet guidebooks for Oahu, Hawaii, Indonesia, Crete, and Sri Lanka, among others. He joins us right now from the island of Idra in Greece. Hi there, Ryan. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
I'm good. And man, you are Mr.
Very well,
Exotic, thanks. Joining us from Idra, Greece, here to talk about Sri Lanka. So before we get into Sri Lanka, when did you first come to Asia and what brought you here?
Oh, I think my first trip to Asia would have been 1987. I was working for a newspaper. I was very young and I went to cover some stuff around the war in Afghanistan back in the Soviet era.
Wow, that's quite a ways back. I'd be interested to hear about some of the trips that you've made back there, too. But since we're talking about Sri Lanka today, when was the first time you visited Sri Lanka? And what was the reason for that trip?
I think my first trip to Sri Lanka was actually for Lonely Planet. I got assigned to do a big chunk of the guidebook, and I think we're talking, it would have been 2003. And then I was back in 2005, right after the tsunami. Mm. I did a whole lot of coverage around what happened on the coast. Including the train that was flooded away, the thousands of people who died. I was there pretty quickly after the tsunami, and then I was in country for about a month, traveling around and talking to people. It was obviously a very serious, significant, and intense time.
Wow, no doubt. So when you think back to those first trips, I realize the second was much different than the first. But having been a person that traveled a ton up to that point, what were some of your first kind of impressions?
You know, I had read about Sri Lanka when I was very young. One of the first adult books I read as a kid was Paul Theroux's The Great Railway Bazaar. And I remember him going through Sri Lanka, talking about its many challenges and saying it was fitting that the whole island looked like a teardrop. Mm. And I think my first time there, I was conflicted because on the surface, Sri Lanka seems like it has everything. It's fertile. It's beautiful. The people are wonderful. It has ancient history, culture, religion. It has nature, beaches. It's even got elephants. You can go on a safari. I mean, it is such an extraordinary place to visit. And yet it always is held back and it's always facing seemingly one problem after another.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, for me and maybe for many people, they might have heard of Sri Lanka, but they don't have too many preconceived visions or notions or ideas about it. Maybe other than that, it's near India and that there's some similarities in culture. And even for me, before I knew, maybe it would be similar to like New Zealand and Australia. So like in what ways fundamentally might Sri Lanka be different from India?
The scale, and you feel the scale immediately. You don't see the just incredible amount of people crammed in living everywhere. You know, when you go to Delhi or Mumbai, you drive for an hour through slums and very densely populated areas that seem to go on and on and on. And the hundreds of millions of people. Sri Lanka feels rural. Even Colombo isn't that big. You know, you can drive from one end to the other in an hour, and that's the biggest city on the island. Very rapidly, no matter which way you go, you're in nature and you're on small two-lane roads. And, you know, you don't have to drive far and you're at a beach that has beautiful beaches right around the entire island.
And today we're going to talk in a bit of depth in the Tamil area in the north. But before heading into that, can you give us like a kind of a broad strokes overview of Sri Lanka and what it is as a nation and what it has to offer? You've kind of touched on a lot of that, but is there any more you can add for a bit of context before we get into a particular area?
You know, the ancient religions that have left all sorts of temples and monuments, especially throughout the middle of the country. You go and find these extraordinarily carved Hindu places that are, they're mystifying, they're fascinating to explore. If you're a Westerner, they're like nothing you've run into anywhere else. And they're really quite accessible because, again, with the sort of low population numbers overall, you can have a world-class kind of UNESCO site almost to yourself. So there's that. Then there's you know, there's a colonial legacy, which is inescapable. The town of Galle on the southwest coast is one of my favorite places in the world, actually. It's an old walled fortress trading city that still looks much as it did hundreds of years ago. And you can just endlessly wander it. And yeah, parts of it are a little bit restored because of tourism, but large parts are not. So you very quickly, one foot after the other, step into the past in a very non-sanitized way. You know, the coast, I keep saying the beaches. My all-time hated cliche is white sand beach. You know, if I'm reading a travel article and I see white sand beach, nine times out of 10, it's about a beach that is not white. You know, it's just ridiculously overused. But not in Sri Lanka. It is the home of white sand beaches worldwide. Maybe the Caribbean equals it. Every beach is white and glistening and beautiful and backed by palm trees. And a few have been, you know, hit by excesses of tourism. But again, 90% are just these endless expanses that you can just wander and luxuriate in and pop into the water. And that kind of, you know, I think solitude is hard to find in beach destinations.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, as a former travel writer myself, it's always tricky that people each have a different vision of what's the best possible beach for them. But, you know, describing the white sand beach as a proper, beautiful, pristine. And white sand is usually super fine. And like Bali has black sand beaches, right? Which is the total opposite, you know? But I guess like everybody would ultimately end up flying into Colombo. And as I understand, that might be part of the region we're going to discuss today. But otherwise, since everybody's going to head there, is it worth a few days stopover? You know, some people like to just get out of the city and go visit the countryside. But how's Colombo? What's that like?
Colombo's pretty big and bustling by Sri Lanka standards, you know, small by across the water in India. But, you know, it has high rises. It has an old colonial district. There's a market area. I like the market area the best because, again, it has a timeless quality. Things are still traded in the streets. It's a mix of wholesalers and retailers, and it's bustling. It's alive. Stuff is happening. You wander around in it. Other parts of Colombo, you know, it has the whole swath of the economy, but it's where people in Sri Lanka who are creative and out to do something interesting, that are looking to start an interesting business, it's where you'll find them. So if you want to see what's happening in Sri Lanka today and see what's at the cutting edge of Sri Lankan culture, it's going to be in Colombo. So that makes it interesting. It's not overstuffed with traditional sites. You can do the historic walkable areas in a day. It does, if you're into shopping, it doesn't have the kind of malls you would find in, say, Bangkok, you know, not glossy malls. So Colombo's kind of like, for me, 2 days. You can have a really interesting 2 days there. The sun sets, because it faces east, the sunsets over the Indian Ocean are probably some of the most spectacular I've seen anywhere on the planet. And that's almost, it's a local tradition. People gather down on the waterfront each night for these spectacular shows.
Cool. Well, I was really excited when we heard we were having you on because, I don't know, I guess you pitched it or we asked you, but you had mentioned that you'd done some traveling in kind of the Tamil majority provinces of the north. So I'm wondering what first piqued your interest in the Tamil majority areas and where exactly are those areas we're going to talk about today?
So it's the northern, very roughly, it's the northern third of the island. It's the two provinces, the northern province, and then some of the north central province or the Tamil areas. What made me interested in going there was, for a long time, even Lonely Planet's coverage, because of the war in the country, there wasn't much coverage of the north. During the fighting, there might be, you know, some some reporting around Jaffna, which is the capital, the regional capital of the north, but there wasn't much else. It was fairly not well known by people outside the country. So after the war ended and the area opened up to get in there and explore, I was just fascinated because it was essentially the uncharted country. What little coverage Lonely Planet had was way out of date, and you were essentially doing it all from scratch.
Well, that makes it much more fun, I gotta think. You know, maybe because that was your first time to Sri Lanka, and so you're experiencing it for the first time as you're writing it and giving tips for others. What were kind of like, what's the most distinctive difference? I mean, obviously there's like a different culture, but is it like the smell of the food that's cooking? Is it geographically different as well? Is the like their architecture different? What's like the big main like thing that would stand out?
The difference is very noticeable, and it's really linked back to the many, many years of war. I actually covered various parts of the South many times over different editions of the guidebook before I then went up north. The war ended, I think, in 2009. And I'd been there a few times before that. But going up north, the South, even though it's natural largely and it's not developed, the towns look contemporary. You get a sense of modern development in life throughout the southern two-thirds of Sri Lanka. There's traditional tourism, there's hotels, there's guest houses, the roads are good. Once you get into the north, you know, it was an economic disaster zone for years and years and years. So you know when you've hit the north because development is much less. There's very simple places to live in the countryside. The roads, except for the ones that were improved just lately, are still really bad. So getting around is still something of a challenge. Sometimes you need a four-wheel drive vehicle, whereas going to a similar type area in the south, you would have a broad, smooth, paved road to get there. The population density is even less than the south, and you just feel you've come to a remote and rural past that is several decades before the rest of the country.
Now, I'm familiar with Jaffna, kind of, I think, the northern capital, but, you know, we're now, what, 14 years removed from the end of the civil war that went on for decades. You know, as someone that's been there and a travel writer, why should people kind of consider maybe making the northern Tamil area as part of their trip?
The Tamil culture is distinct from the rest of the culture in the country, and it's more Muslim-based. It's more village-based. You get a much more sense of families. It's a contrast to the south that I think is very interesting. Also, just because the development has been so limited, it's much more natural. You know, it's kind of like, this is it's the best analogy I can think of right now. It's kind of like for people who go to the American Southwest and they go because they want to see huge, wide open spaces. Mm. Well, the North has huge, wide open spaces. So you get the majesty of nature and the majesty of the landscape in a way you don't find elsewhere in the country. And then, you know, back to beaches, there's just, I mean, kilometer after kilometer after kilometer where there's no village, there's no guest house, there's just no anything. Hmm. But there's this gorgeous turquoise water breaking right offshore. And, you know, it's kind of a fantasy. Now, the flip side, of course, is you go for the history, too. And that was when I was first writing about it on my major research trip. That was the part that was the most striking, the legacy of that war and how you see evidence of it all over the place. Mm. And that is also, you know, if you're going to go to the north, you need to be aware of the war. You need to be aware of the stories behind it. You need to be aware of the tragedies it entailed, And then that becomes part of your journey and visit as well, is understanding what occurred here.
Okay, it's very intriguing. My interest has been piqued for sure. Usually I'm following along with a Google map. Maybe I'll open one here in a second. What I was thinking is maybe you could give us some specific, like, kind of top tourist, like, what was the best beach or your most memorable beach, or, you know, what, like, if there's some cool historical sites, what's like the coolest, best one? Or is there like a hike or something natural that you could recommend? Maybe you can give us two or three kind of top destinations.
Within the north, starting in Jaffna, I would go northeast up to, there's a lighthouse there, and it's fittingly called Point Pedro. There's beaches running in both directions that are some of the prettiest I've seen on the planet. And again, you know, bring food and water with you, and then just explore and luxuriate and relax and hang out and just have a day. Talk. It's about as you feel you have truly gotten away. So I would go up there. I would have a decent vehicle that can handle bad roads, and I would just start driving around and seeing what I found. You know, on a much more serious level, no one should go to the north and not go to the northeast, which is pretty much, there's not even really many villages left there, but that was where, you know, the war ended, and it has been controversial ever since. It's been investigated by the UN, but that was where tens of thousands of Tamil people were herded into one area, and then the army opened up with artillery on them. It's a horrible legacy. It's shocking when you're there. If you've been to the World War I battlefields in the north of France, where the land still bears scars, you know, over 100 years later, of the horrors that happened there, it's the same thing here. You just see it in all directions. And yes, it's sobering. And yes, it's the opposite of a cheery beach. But you start to understand what went on here, what the people's struggles were, what the tragedy was that has, in many ways, continues to shadow the entire country.
So if someone was going to go travel the Tamil areas in the north, how do they do it? How do they get around? Can you rent a car? Do you got to take public bus? What does Ryan recommend?
You can do both. You can get a car with a driver, which is handy because, you know, leave the driving to the driver and just enjoy the trip. And, you know, especially if it's a good driver, which usually you can arrange any place you stay. They'll know the roads, they'll know the shortcuts, they'll know the conditions, they'll know, oh, there's no way we can go there, but we can go there. They will have recommendations. One of the things about the north is because it's still not very commercial, you know, in some parts of the world, like in Bali, if you get the wrong driver, you'll spend all day at shops being encouraged to buy things for the kickback for the driver. Well, that's not really an issue in the north. So a car with a driver is good. You can also absolutely drive yourself. There's no reason you can't. You don't have the expertise of a driver. And even things like Google Maps have not quite caught up to conditions on the ground. So you can't rely on them. But if you're willing to get lost, if you're willing to just take your chance and say, that's an interesting looking road, let's see what happens. You can definitely drive yourself. If you want to save money, take buses. Buses kind of go everywhere eventually. and in the classic way the world over, what better way to meet people than when you're stuck on a bus bouncing along a road for a few hours? And I found people everywhere, just especially in the north, they're just interested and fascinated by people turning up and showing an interest. And then you can take the train. And the train is, you know, Sri Lanka has a great little train system. You can take the train from Jaffna to Colombo, and it's a beautiful tropical rural ride. It takes all day, doesn't move very fast, but gives you more time to look out the window. You know, that's what I always say.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, you know, Sorry. And thinking about the bus or the train, you know, I was thinking that's also a good way to kind of experience some like local snack foods or try to experiment, because people probably offer, they're like offering you little snacks and stuff so you can try things without going all in. How is the food? Is it kind of everywhere? Is there a big food culture there?
There is. Meals are meant to be enjoyed. The classic Sri Lankan curry, as they call it, involves about 20 small bowls of very diverse foods. It's kind of like vaguely familiar like Indian, but with many other aspects of Asian cuisine mixed in. It's all made very, very fresh, all made, you know, the island is just, everything grows. It's the most fertile place you can imagine. So everything is available for the chefs. And yeah, when you're on the train, when the train pulls into a station, you know, there are no cafes, there is no restaurant car, but there are dozens and dozens of vendors who during the 3-minute stop are selling through the window. They come running down the aisle. And again, it's, you know, it can be fried bananas or just this huge range of crispy treats, or, you know, it you have no idea what you're going to see, but it's worth trying anything that comes your way.
That's great. You know, it probably is, but just to be sure we ask it, is this a safe region to be traveling? Not just danger from sort of maybe past political unrest, but road safety, petty crime, physical safety, that kind of thing?
It's generally quite safe. You know, the old disclaimer, bad things can happen anywhere, but there's no particular fear that visitors should have to both the north and the country in general.
All right. So how about like... you know, is this something, it seems like you could do it as an independent traveler.
Yes.
Is there anything, maybe like some specific tips though? Is there anything like people might want to make sure they do, like any vaccinations or pack this for sure? Any like kind of tips that you'd want to know before you set out just specific to Sri Lanka?
I think if you forgot something major, you could replace it in Colombo. But once you get outside of Colombo, it is a pretty rural country overall. So you'd want to think through, what do I need, and make certain you have it. You know, again, you could probably get, you know, bug spray in Jaffna, but outside of Jaffna, you couldn't. You probably couldn't get sunscreen outside of Jaffna. And I'm talking about the north. So you want to be a little more self-sufficient in your packing, not assuming you can just pick up anything you need at any time.
Well, look, you've seriously piqued my interest, and I've stared at maps of northern Sri Lanka and kind of those little pieces of land that jut out with water all around. And since you were talking about those beaches, I mean, the coast is hugely full of beaches, like you said. So someone's been to Sri Lanka and you've sort of sold them on the north. What's one last parting gift that you can give people to really entice them to experience the Tamil North?
Oh, I think wandering the streets of Jaffna, which is kind of the country in microcosm, and you can just spend a day out meeting people, eating the foods of Jaffna, stopping into the cafes, seeing the old historic buildings left over from all the different people who have ruled Jaffna at one point or another. I would just go to, and you won't see many other travelers while you do this.
Cool. Well, you know, if people go to the website and check out our show notes on talktravelasia.com, we'll have some photos of some of these cool things that you've shared with us and some links to some of your work, maybe a little bit Instagram or something. You got some links or some stuff that people could check out for them?
Yeah, I'll send some stuff to you. I will send you some links and put them in the show notes. You can go to my old website, ryanverberkmos.com.
Cool. Thanks so much, Ryan. We really appreciate you sharing this very interesting corner of the earth that I hope to make it to one day. Thanks so much.
Okay. Fabulous.
You know, that conversation, Scott, just kind of piqued my interest. It seems like it was almost just the introduction to Sri Lanka, or even just an introduction to Sri Lanka and the northern provinces. Like, I think still that we might have done kind of an overview from your trip there once before, but it really was just scratching the surface. Hey.
Yeah. And you always think that 25 minutes with someone or a half hour is going to be enough to cover it, but clearly wasn't, even when we were focusing kind of on the Tamil provinces. And, you know, it reminded me that I've got to get back there again someday, because I haven't seen so many of the major sites, but the north just sounded really neat. I liked the picture he painted and how it sounded so quiet and, you know, unpopulated. And he was talking about beaches, and I opened Google Maps and I looked, and like from Point Pedro that he mentioned, that whole coast heading southeast from there is just like, I don't know, it's got to be 40, 50 kilometer long beaches, and all the areas around there along the coast, it just seems to be all kinds of beaches and inlets. And I think it would be quite fascinating to sort of see this area that was, you know, part of a major battle zone for decades and get to know the people and whatnot.
Yeah, you know, the history part's kind of tragic. And again, he was talking sort of like Normandy. As soon as he mentioned that, I had opened Google Maps. And that beach you're talking about that looks like maybe it's 50 kilometers long, what struck me was that it looked like it was 2 kilometers of dunes. Like, it looks like that the sand goes so far in, and there must be like these massive sand dunes along that whole coastline. That beach was huge. So, yeah. And, you know, from the introduction, we kind of skipped over some of the history and stuff, but like people have lived on this island for like 100,000 or more years. There's been civilization there, and with all the rich, you know, religious history, and it's got to be amazing. And Ryan's a great guest. Like, he's really good at giving you nice, to the point, succinct answers, and he's really like capturing, you know, like the specific, like, oh, how's the snack food on the train kind of thing or whatever. But yeah, there's so much more. We should have him coming back on the show to talk specifically about Sri Lanka again, I think.
Yeah, almost. And he mentioned something that it just didn't dawn on me. I guess maybe I thought because of the long conflict there wouldn't be rail lines. But, you know, I looked online. He mentioned taking the train from Colombo to Jaffna, and there's trains that take anywhere from about 7.5 hours to about 9.5 hours. But you can jump on one, you know, at about 6 a.m. and get up there at 1 p.m, or like 9:30 in the morning and get up there at 6:30. So if I was going to go, that would seem like a pretty awesome way to do it, is just jump on the train and sit looking out the window all day, if you could get a semi-comfortable seat. But I really got intrigued by his suggestion of doing it that way versus, you know, sitting on a bus or something for a super long time. So, yeah, I'd be well up for the train up there.
Yeah, man, AirAsia flies into Colombo, yeah. That's what we should have done a couple of weeks ago when I still had time. Okay, hopefully soon. We'll check the weather season. I don't know when is the best time to hit the beaches there. But I like the fact that also he mentioned that, well, we don't know when he was there last, but it's probably still not that crowded. You know, if it's challenging still to get there, they don't have like a lot of like developed infrastructure, like he was saying. I mean, that makes it nice, but that also makes it more challenging for others who might kind of spoil that vibe, you know. So I bet now it's, I mean, post-COVID, probably recovering a bit too, but yeah, maybe it's a good time to go in the next year or two. It's probably the best time ever.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, that poor country, be it you go back to 2003 and the tsunami, and then they've had political upheaval, and then, you know, COVID, of course, like everywhere. But then just a few years before that, they had that Easter bombing too. So I don't think it is a heavily touristed area. And you have a good point. The next couple of years is probably the time to get there. So, yeah, thanks, Ryan, for being our guest. We'll definitely have to have him back. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Be like Gary B. Become a patron. Sponsor the show from a few dollars a month upwards. Click donate on our page to do that, or go to patreon.com and get a special bonus out in between all these. Why don't you take us out, Trevor?
Yeah, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, Ryan. We'll definitely try to get you on the show again. People listening, you can also check us out on talktravelasia.com. Our website's got show notes with links to Ryan's stuff and all of our other episodes and all of our other tips to help you enjoy your travels here. So we look forward to whomever is on again in 2 weeks, and we'll see you then. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on Talk Travel Asia. We look forward to sharing with you again soon.
Hey, Scott, do you remember the time we walked on top of the wall at Angkor Thom in Cambodia?